You have power back now? Well, I guess you do. Unless you're running on a generator. Are you podcasting on a generator, you dedicated SOB?
I did a... I have the professor from Gilligan's Island down here, and he's on a bamboo bicycle, which that and there's a hamster and a wheel.
So we were both without power.
The radio, I think, is just enough that Marianne can get a signal out to passing cruise ships.
Gilligan!
I got Gilligan. Oh, Gilligan ran through the camp being chased by something and wrecked it. It will never be rescued now.
Do you have any damage to the house? Any trees down? Anything else? I mean, this big snowstorm is what we're talking about. I had all kinds of crap.
The property damage thus far would seem to be 2 half-gallons of milk.
Oh, good. Which you know is actually, you can put on insurance, right? Spoiled
milk.
I did
not know that.
Well, I mean, but you'd be, see, it wouldn't work for you, though, because, you know, your deductible would be like $500. So you pay $500 to get 2 gallons of milk. Could work, could do it, if you were insane.
Hey, so right after we did last week's Grizz, a couple things happened since last week's Grizz. I think it was the same afternoon I happened to... Where was I? The story's escaping me. That's how quick these things are. Oh, okay. I went through a McDonald's drive-thru.
And got a McRib?
No. But they have already rolled out their Christmas drinks.
Yeah, what is going on? Target?
This was a week, right? Today's, you know, it's Halloween right now. This was a week ago this happened. And I'm thinking, man, like, so it's really been quite a few days of that, right? Like, it's not even Halloween. Like, I pulled up and they're like, here are the drinks of the season. And these are like, you know, these are Christmas drinks. It's like the peppermint mocha and the stuff. And I really like that. You know, that's my kind of drink, a peppermint mocha. And I was like, man, it's not even Halloween. And then, you know, when I was really saying that was in the middle of the blizzard.
Right. It does. It feels like Christmas. The massive blizzard, the massive snowstorm that came through the East Coast. Record-breaking snowfall, by the way. Massachusetts, I think, had 27 inches. Mm. Milford, New Jersey, not too far from where we drive up to the Poconos, 19 inches of snow.
Jeez.
Yeah, I mean, it was at Target like 2 weeks ago, and Target already has all their Christmas stuff up. When is it too? I mean, to me, it seems like this year is earlier than ever before.
I'm with you, because normally I wouldn't even bring this up, right? Like, this is like, this is the thing that, I don't know, like middle-aged housewives talk about over crocheting, right?
Right, and they complain about, can you believe they've got the Christmas stuff already at the Penney's, at J.C. Penney's?
It is too early. Like, I'm somewhat abashed about saying it, but it is. It's too early.
And did you see yesterday I sent you that photo of that drink that I thought would be right up your alley at Dunkin'. They're rolling that out for the holidays already. And it's not even Halloween yet.
Right. And as luck had it, as I was leaving Williamsport, Pennsylvania last night, there was a Dunkin' Donuts. And I thought, you know, I got a 3-hour car ride here in front of me. Like, a little coffee wouldn't hurt, right? And I pulled in and asked about that. And they said, actually, they won't offer that until November 1st at the Dunkin' where I was.
Oh, blast.
So I was really I was so defeated in every regard.
Power was out. You had to abandon to a hotel. You tried to go get your hot chocolate mint. This is exactly what people suffer through in Rwanda.
Hmm. I didn't realize that. The worst part about it, and I'll tell you a little bit about it here. Hang on a second. I had a piece of adhesive from a mailing strip stuck on my finger there. It was like the equivalent of like a glue boogie, and I couldn't get it off my finger. Anyway, so...
Did you just wipe it on your pants?
No, under my car seat. So that's where they go. It's a little treat for my mechanic. So
under your desk. Whoever thought to stick gum under a desk? Whose bright idea was that?
No one will ever find that. Oh, Mr. Presbyluski will be in late scraping it off the bottom of your desk.
I stuck my hand in some gum at a desk the other day in a public location, and that's just the worst feeling. You can't get it off. Mm. You got to run right to the bathroom.
Abandon ship. So Saturday, which was the 29th, there was a scheduled Chikara event in our hometown of Reading, PA. And as I was leaving, you know, I was getting texts from friends, from my wife, from... co-workers, from everybody saying, hey, you think the show's still going on? And I figured, yeah, you know, I mean, Chikara just doesn't cancel shows. Now, I should tell you, though.
You guys earlier, are like the post office, right?
We are, more or less. We
Nothing
don't work
stops
those,
you from
those
working.
Certain holidays. But we did, for the first time in the history of the company, earlier this year, we did because of the hurricane. In August, we were supposed to have a two-day event in Easton, and it was like during – part of it fell during the window when they said, like, the hurricane's going to be on top of Easton. And we just thought, you know, it would be irresponsible for the performers, for the fans, for everybody – for us to try and have this thing. So we canceled one of the two events, and we condensed everything into one super event and got the heck out of Easton. But we thought, I mean, we've gone 10 seasons now without canceling a show, right? I mean, why right. would we cancel another one here 8 weeks later or, you know, whatever it is?
Show's got to go on.
Exactly. The show must go on. So as I was rolling into Reading, and I was running a little ahead of schedule, and it was really coming down. I thought one of my favorite places to get coffee is at the Coffee Beanery at the Berkshire Mall. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, it's a cold day. I'm going to be over at a building, you know, with nothing to do for a couple hours here as we're doing our setup and our, you know, preparations and everything else. I'm going to get myself a cup of coffee. And as I was coming back out, like, I'm watching people in their vehicles, like, sliding through this parking lot, crashing into each other, like pedestrians doing death leaps out of the way to avoid being mauled, you know, run right. down. I'm thinking, you know, it might be a little worse out than I'd originally thought. So, as
You're
I...
like a regular Sherlock Holmes.
I am. Thank you for that.
You're the obvious Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
That'd be a great skit, by the way.
I think that is an SNL skit, to be honest, though. Or at least the Higgins Boys and Gruber skit. So then we got this update from the Reading Regional Airport, where, you know, certain members of my family have had connections for years. And they basically said, they said, this is going to be announced on the radio shortly, that Route 78 leaving Reading is about to be closed. And probably within the next 60 to 90 minutes, portions of 422 are going to be closed. If you're coming into Reading, there's a chance you're going to get stuck there. And if you need to get out... You need to get out soon, because this is what they're expecting. The storm is going to reach its worst at 8 p.m. You know, due to trees being down and power lines coming down because of it, these roadways are being closed, you know, right now or are about to be closed because of emergency reasons. And if you intend to get out of Reading in the next 24 hours, you need to get out in the next 90 minutes. And so all the wrestlers were there for the most part. There were one or two cars that were absent at this point. The ring was being set up. This was like as 11th hour as it gets. And then some people from the building the venue where we were going to hold the event came up and basically said, our staff really does not want to stay here. They want to go back to their homes, like back to their families. You're not intending to carry on with this thing tonight, are you? And, it is always with, like, the greatest reluctance that we would cancel, you know? Like, that's,
right.
you know, that's like, that's it. You've been defeated. You've been defeated by the elements, right? Like, we are man, right? We're masters of the planet. Are we not? If not masters of the universe, Orko. And I just thought, we cannot be defeated by this again. Like, we just had this in August with the stinking hurricane. Like, you've got to be kidding me. And, but once we kind of put it out there to everybody, like, there's a good chance we're going to get trapped in Reading tonight. Everyone said, we got to get out. And, like, the ring just started, like, taking itself apart and putting itself back in the truck. Like
a transformer.
Right. Like, it just started happening.
Yeah.
And it was like, get out now. So a lot of the crew, you know, Sunday we were scheduled for Williamsport, PA. A lot of the crew just went to Williamsport that night. Like, they just wanted to get out of the path of the storm because, you know, it went right up through Reading, Allentown, off into Jersey, maybe hit New York. I don't know. You tell me. That's
yeah.
more your neck of the woods. But we tried, you know, as best as we could to get the word out to everybody that we had to cancel. And, you know, we always feel like we have egg on our face when we're saying that, right? You know what I mean? And for the most part, I think word traveled. But unfortunately, there are two instances where word did not travel fast enough. And those of us, like the senior-most guys, the Gen 1 guys, like we always kind of divide up these responsibilities in emergency situations. Like, look, you're going to call these three or four people and tell them this has changed or this has been canceled. You know, whatever that situation is. And then this guy's going to call three or four. You call three or four. And we thought we had divided this all up correctly. As we came to discover, though, a little bit later, as it took me about 3 hours to get the 30 miles back home, one of our referees didn't get the call and turned up at the building. And he said, yeah, I'm here at the building. And there's a sign on the door that says that the wrestling event has been canceled. Oh. And I thought, oh, God.
He's the guy that's not on the proper snow list.
Right.
There's like, always like, that one guy who shows up.
How did we miss this? And then, unfortunately, we also found out at least one fan showed up and didn't get word. So, you know, then we felt even worse about it. And I think, you know, just the conditions.
One
and
fan
everything.
Is pretty good. That's a pretty good number, though.
One that we know of. One that we know of.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, all of that. So, I came back home and woke up to the power being out Sunday morning, which I thought, well, this is no big deal. I just have to leave, right? I got to get on the road to Williamsport. You know, and the hot water was still working, thankfully. So, you know, I could still shave and shower in the dark, but, you know, which is why I showed up with weird zigzag beard face in Williamsport. But I was really surprised then to discover upon returning home late last night that, you know, even though the power had gone out the night before, it still hadn't come back on. And, so we had to beat a hasty retreat to a local hotel.
Yeah. As did we.
Yeah. And yeah. Again, I felt defeated by that.
Oh, it was horrible. I mean, you have to up and leave. You feel like a disaster. It felt like a war zone. I mean, I'm sure for those of our listeners who, you know, maybe are in Colorado or something like that, maybe they are used to this sort of thing, I guess, at this point in the season. But this was the first time that we had this much snowfall since the Civil War in the Northeast. This is no joke. I think since 1860 or 1861 or something like that. This much snowfall. And records were broken. 27 inches, as I mentioned, in Massachusetts. 19 in West Milford, New Jersey. And we were home. I had just arrived home on the train after the show on Saturday. And lo and behold, and we were about to do the paranormal report. And so I jumped online to do that around 12:30. And it was already snowing pretty heavily. The backyard was already covered in snow. We had about 2 or 3 inches. And you started to hear... Because, you know, well, the main problem was with the leaves, right? The leaves were still on the trees. And so the trees were being weighted down by all of this snow, this wet, heavy snow.
Right.
And you just, if you were standing outside, you just started hearing cracking. It almost sounded like something from Lost. You know when the smoke monster was about to appear, you'd see trees vanishing in the distance? That's what it was. Trees were cracking and snapping in the distance. And you were worried, right, that huge branches were about to topple on top of you. And I think 11 people were killed as a result of this storm.
Yeah, there were 5 in the state of Pennsylvania alone.
Wow.
The craziest story I heard, you know, via radio was this, that, you know, when the snow was so bad, like the visibility was terrible on the highways and so on and so forth, and someone, I think they were on 95 where it crossed over the Pennsylvania Turnpike. They just drove right off the road and plummeted right down on top of another car like a dart that was underneath on the turnpike. And then I saw my own really crazy thing as during my 3-hour trek back to my house after the canceled event of Saturday. In my rearview mirror, I got stuck behind a combo plow truck and a salt truck.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going like 15 miles an hour. This contributed to my long commute.
Yeah, and you get stuck behind those things. But on the other hand, you were getting the best of the roads. Right,
exactly. So I kind of thought, well, if it takes me a little bit long, it's not like I got anything else to do. But I thought, you know, it could be worse. So as I'm going, and there's like 3 or 4 cars built up behind me too, you know, because we're all trying to get somewhere. As I'm looking in my rearview mirror, maybe 8 or 10 car lengths back, where thankfully there was no one, a huge tree just fell right across the road where we had been, you know, 20 seconds before.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was just,
you think about it, like luck of the draw,
right?
It crushed your car. I mean, that's, we were inside and I was doing the paranormal report and all of a sudden I heard this loud crack and I thought, uh-oh. And I said, hold on a second, Jim. And, my wife comes running up the steps. She's like, a tree just fell. And I said, hey, go downstairs, call the electric company. I'll wrap this up, call the electric company. And then, you know, we got to move the car because that tree could come down on our car.
Yeah.
And so she's like getting her shoes on to go and do it. And all of a sudden, crack, tree comes down, lands and crushes our car. Smashed right through the back of it.
Jeez.
Which was great. So smashed the taillight, the bumper, the side mirror. So now we need to get an estimate. And after having gone through everything with the hurricane, where we had a huge tree come down in our backyard, smash the neighbor's house, they had another tree come down. And then I'm standing there as I'm trying to pull the car out as it's pinned by this tree. And I try to find a space on the road where there's no trees around that would fall on, atop it. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden I look across the road at our neighbor's house and I hear, just like the smoke monster again, a giant crack. And I see this enormous tree well above their two-story house. And the backyard just begin to crack and fall over. I don't know where it landed. It didn't land on their house. Apparently, probably fell like onto a fence or something on sideways. And then my wife and I were like, all right, that's it. We're getting out of here. Because just branches just kept falling. We were worried they were going to come through the house.
Sure, yeah.
And of course, at that point, we lost power. And so what do you do? What do you do in that situation? You think, oh, should we hide in should we go in the basement? Maybe that. And then what are you going to do for, 3 days with no power in a cold basement? No, yeah. You got to do something, you got to take care of your one-year-old. So we up and started to drive into the city, and it was like a war zone. And as we were driving through, cop cars.
It was like War of the Worlds. Like, people were really freaking out.
It really was. Cop cars everywhere, police lines wrapped around trees, power lines down, no power, people trying to maneuver around trees in the road. And I was like, can we just get to 95? Can we just, get to high, so we can get into Manhattan and stay overnight there? So that was the craziness. But, we still don't have power. We still don't have power back in New Jersey. So we are out of town.
Mm. Crazy times. Hey, listen, just to tell you a little bit about what is upcoming on this installment of the Grizz 159. Not only will we spin one of your guilty pleasure songs as we get to the end of the episode, but we're going to be joined this week by the hosts of the weekly Long Box, who are going to educate us a little bit about what we've been missing in the realm of comics.
Yeah, I'm excited about that, because you and I are woefully behind. Well, I've been picking up a few of the new 52 books.
Yeah, you're caught up more than I am. But it'll be interesting to hear it from the mouths of the experts. We also wanted to let you know that upcoming, it seems like we may have lead singer of Johnny Hates Jazz, Clark Dashler, joining us on the program. I think that's maybe a week or two away, so we're very excited about that. If for any reason you've got some questions that you'd like posed to the Johnny Hates Jazz guy, email us over at grizzlybearcafe@gmail.com. You can also tweet us or drop by our Facebook fan page if you're a loyal follower of all things Grizzly Productions. There are two things I want to tell you about upcoming. This week on Mommy Beta, we are giving away a $750 value from our friends at Sonos. You can pick up the Play 3, Play 5, and the Bridge system from Sonos. To find out how, you've got to listen to Mommy Beta. That giveaway is just days away, so you've got a couple more days to get in. And then thereafter, we've still got – that's not the end of the giveaways, is it, Clayton?
No, we have a few more shows. We're going to be giving away one on The Trending Show, on Daddy on Board, and I believe The Paranormal Report we're going to be giving them. Sonos away. So you have another chance to win. One of our listeners, Chad Ingles, just wrote us this morning his new Sonos that he won here, I believe on – was it the Grizz that he won it? Possibly.
No. I think he won his from the sports report. Matt Mahler was the
winner
on the Grizz.
So Chad wrote and said, thanks to the sports report, and he just received it today. He said it's like Christmas in October. Maybe in keeping with our Christmas in October theme.
Right. By that, what he means is when he went out on his porch to sign from the UPS guy, he slipped on ice and broke his ankle.
Right.
So, jammed his Cossacks. So I also wanted to let you know... it's not far away at all. Less than 2 weeks to go before Chikara arrives on pay-per-view. You can watch our High Noon season finale. Go to GFL.TV. That's Go Fight Live. GFL.TV. Find out how you can purchase High Noon at 4 p.m. Eastern on November 13th. You will see me in the main event opposite Eddie Kingston, as well as tons of other matches. There's information about the streaming free pre-show that you can watch and all things High Noon over at ChikaraPro.com.
Check all that stuff out. Good stuff. Hey, we were out to dinner the other night.
Oh?
Now, actually, no, we were out to breakfast. I want to make sure everyone knows what meal we were having. And tell me if this drives you nuts. It always drives me nuts. For me, marketing, right? If marketing works...
Oh, my God, yeah. Marketing drives me nuts.
If marketing works, you don't need to... You don't need to affirm your message to me. That is to say, if I'm ordering off of your menu, we were at this place where... They had on the menu like 80 different breakfast items. But the theme of the restaurant was such that it was like a 1950s diner music kind of place, like, you know, lots of Elvis on the walls and, you know, Beatles and that sort of stuff. Rock Around the Clock, you had Buddy Holly, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So all of their breakfast items were named after things of that era, mm-hmm. right?
Right on.
So they had, you know, different names for their waffles and omelets and things, and they were all different musical acts. And so I had ordered, because it wasn't on the menu, I just wanted some eggs mm-hmm. and some bacon and toast, you know? I didn't need a crazy heavy syruped waffle. They had a funnel cake waffle, by the way, which sounded amazing,
right?
But it also sounded like something you'd get at a carnival, and then you wouldn't want to eat for 4 days because you would have had your calorie count for that many days. Mm. Certainly don't need that to start your day, right? Like an artery clogging sugar. Yeah,
to each his own.
Right. I forgot who I'm talking to. The pastry king. Mm. So one of the items on the menu, so my wife ordered this like baked oatmeal for breakfast that they had in like a crock, and it was, it was quite delicious.
Right. That sounds good.
And, but she said, oh, you know, I'll have the, when the waitress got around to her, she said, you know, I'll have the you know, the baked oatmeal. And there's only one baked oatmeal on the menu.
I know where this is going.
You know, it's not like the 30 waffles where.
Right, right.
So there's only the one baked oatmeal on the menu, and mm-hmm. the woman, in an effort to keep up with the marketing, says, "Oh, you wanted the Nina Simone."
I love it.
Oh, and my wife, you know, she's, you know how gracious she is. Mm-hmm. She doesn't even think about it. She just says, "Oh yes, that's the one that I would like. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I would like the Nina Simone. I'm sorry, I didn't call it by its actual name, but I want to be clear that I'm calling it by that." And then my mom,
and then
sort
you,
of,
and you got up and decked the waitress,
right? Then I punched her and I said, "I'm not calling my eggs by that name, right? The little Deuce Coupe or whatever it was that you wanted me to call it." You know, it wasn't even on the menu, but she's like, mm-hmm. "Well, I imagine if we did have eggs and bacon on the menu, we'd call it the little Deuce Coupe. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to say that, but I want you to call it that. Mm-hmm. Just give me eggs." And I think my mom, in sort of keeping with the theme of the restaurant, decided also that she would order by the name, now that she had seen that my lovely wife was chastised for not calling it by. And there were 800, you know, items on the menu. It's like a cheesecake factory. Mm. So, I mean, I guess maybe that helps. I don't know, but it drives me nuts. Like, look, when I go to Starbucks, has been effective in their marketing of the things you should call their sizes of beverages, right? Mm-hmm. I often find myself going into a Dunkin' Donuts saying, "Give me a grande." Mm. You know, oh, I mean, medium, you know, Starbucks, it works because nowhere on the menu does it say small. Mm-hmm. It says tall. And right. So I call it a tall. And everyone, we've gotten to this mode of calling these things by those names, and it works. Mm-hmm. It works for them. It's pretentious, perhaps, but it works for them, you know? Mm-hmm. But if I were to say, it actually has happened to me at Starbucks as well. I don't know if it's ever happened to you, where you accidentally call it by its normal name, and I've said, "Hey, give me a large. I'll take a large iced coffee." Mm-hmm. And they'll say, and the one guy one time to me said, "Oh, you mean a venti? Yes. If that's the largest one you have on your menu, then that's the one that I want. Whatever it is that you guys call it."
Do you find yourself irritated at Starbucks by that? Like that they won't respond unless you know the coded term?
Right. I mean, I'm irritated by it if you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Right? If you're an intelligent individual.
Oh, the Nina Simone.
Oh, you wanted. Oh, I see what you ordered. You wanted the Nina Simone. I mm-hmm. see. We don't call it the baked oatmeal here. That's probably why you mistakenly called it that, but we have another name for it.
Yeah, you can't call the baked oatmeal dish that we've renamed Nina Simone baked oatmeal because there's no, you know, the intrinsic value of that is lost on me. So if you could just reference it in that way.
It's very passive aggressive, and don't pretend like you don't know what I mean by large. This is the only coffee shop in the world that has alternate names for the sizes of beverages.
Well, you know, other coffee houses have adopted that as well. And
really,
Yeah, not necessarily their naming, but in that they have alternate names as well. Though some do mimic the Starbucks. And do you know their motivation on that, or the philosophy that what's that guy's name? Howard Schultz, right?
Howard
He's the guy
Schultz,
that instituted
yeah.
that.
Yeah,
I saw an interesting documentary about Starbucks and about him, and he explained, you know, he explained it like this, and there were two different explanations. His explanation was, who wants to go into a coffee house and say, "I'll have a small." That's why he changed the name to a tall. But contrary to that, in addition to which, then they had somebody who was maybe from a different department at Starbucks corporate or what have you, who said that it was part of an idea that you're creating a culture for your customers, in that you have your own vernacular, that in order to be a regular at a Starbucks, there's a different vernacular you have to learn. You know, like, you've got to understand what tall, grande, and venti mean. And it makes you feel like an insider, and it makes the experience more seductive. And I thought that was really intriguing.
It's probably true.
Oh, I definitely think it is.
I think it works. I mean, that's why you want to go hang out at a Starbucks, right? I mean, that's why I like to go there and grab my computer, go there and do some work, because I feel like, it's what does Howard Schultz call it? The third place?
Yeah, or the other place, whatever he calls it.
Right. You've got work, you've got home, and then the Starbucks is the other place, right?
Right. Now, that's interesting in that my experience with Starbucks is completely different from yours, in that I want to get in and out as fast as possible. Like, Starbucks that don't have drive-thrus, like, I'm almost like, I can't give them my money. Like, I want those stores to go out of business so that only the drive-thru ones flourish. Like, I want my time to be spent there as minimal as possible. I don't want to hang out there. I don't want to be in that store.
I find it so inviting. It's a cozy atmosphere, you know. Mm-hmm. Because I think I spent quite a bit of time in them in different parts, you know, of the country that I've lived, and it's. I feel like I was explaining this to my wife the other day. She said, "You know, you need to just relax at home." Like, I'm reading that new, you know, the new big Steve Jobs biography, which is 630 pages, and I was doing work all day. I think you and I had done a podcast. I said, "You know, I just want to go to the coffee shop and read for a little bit." She's like, "Why can't you just sit at home and read?" Mm-hmm. I said, "Well, because I feel like Costanza on that episode of Seinfeld where he brings the videotape over to Jerry's house, and he's like, "Why do you want to watch this here?" He said, "Because then I feel like I'm out of the house. I'm doing something." That's how I feel about it. Like, I'm out of the house, right? Like, why do I need to go there? Plus, they have great coffee there, right? I can go and sit in the big plush chairs and enjoy some coffee and read my book, you know? And I feel like I'm forced to be here to read. Otherwise, there's too many distractions at my house, right? Mm-hmm.
I will say this. I'm not saying this as an accusation of you. I'm saying this as an accusation of all people that have to hang out at a Starbucks to, like, be on their laptop or read. I think it's an affectation. I think it's pretentious. It's something. It's an air that you put on. Like, look at me. You know? Like, this is the kind of thing, I think, when someone is perhaps at a loss for a better way to express it, they say, or they're maybe just, they're marketing to a more base demographic, they would say, there's a sexiness to being seen reading a book at Starbucks. You know what I mean? Like, does that characterize?
I could see what you mean
by
that.
But I don't think that's correct. What I want to say is, I think that's not a fully realized sentiment. I think there's something about that implies a particular level of status. There is, like, a luxury that comes with that, you know? Mm. People want to be seen there reading the book, as if to say, like, I'm so carefree, I have so little to do, you know, that I can spend my day here reading this novel in the window of a Starbucks, getting my coffee refilled as many times as I want. You know, like... It's a statement of luxury, I think. And I think someone that thinks about that less might say, oh, you know, there's kind of like there's a sexiness to it, right? Like, that's the kind of thing marketing people like to say, right? Because sex sells. Like, anytime I can say something sexy. And you know what I'm talking about, right? Because you'll see that, whether it's in documentaries or business programs or whatever. Well, they say, yeah, you know, there's like a sexiness to Diet Pepsi. No, there isn't. No.
No, really.
False. Drinking robot sweat is not sexy. But, like, they want to draw that connotation, right? Because marketing people know that sex sells. So, they, you know, here's this experience which has nothing to do with being sexy. But, like, if I can somehow connote in a consumer's brain Diet Pepsi with sexiness, you know what I mean? Like, however on earth I have to make that happen, I'm going to try and do it.
And well, I think it works that you're not at your office, right? Because you can't relax when you're at your office. So, and you don't want to go home because when you get home, you've got chores and responsibility, right? So here we have a place in between those two places where we want you just to relax, just kick back, you know, and if you've got that extra time, and these are the folks that do, as evidenced by those who are sitting in our windows staring out longingly at the street.
You better believe it.
But I've always enjoyed, personally, the coffee shop that I actually go to near my house is an independent coffee shop. I like mm-hmm. to support the local places, and they have delicious coffee, and, you know, there's just some locals that wander through there, and it's you know, it's inviting. I sit back in there away from everyone, and they have a great pastry wall, a huge case of delicious cookies and different things, and I get a few cookies and a, you know, cappuccino or just a regular coffee and sit there and do some work, and I feel like I'm out of the house. I'm doing something. Because when I'm at home, it feels like work. You know, I'm up in my office. I'm doing work. When I'm here, I can just kind of kick back and read, and then I'm, you know, and I'm focused that way. But you don't have that. You want to just get in and get out. And where do you sit and read? Do you sit and read like on your recliner? In bed is where you do your most reading? What do you do?
No, I hide in the bathroom.
Yeah, you spend about an hour and a half in there reading.
Yeah, I barricade myself in there. The first thing I do, you know, is I take off all my clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
except for a sock.
Uh-huh. Four socks, actually, I leave on. And I go in there and I just bar the door, you know? And, you know, I'm going to try and get a couple chapters dug before I come out.
Right.
I think I want to say this about the Starbucks experience. And Clayton and I obviously have diametrically opposed experiences there. Like, I want to be in and out of there as quick as possible. If there was, and I'm not sure why there isn't yet, if there was a chain, like a Starbucks-like chain of coffee shops, and I want to get in on this with you, eggheads, okay? So if you want to email me, if you got some venture capital or whatever, I want to start a series of Starbucks-like coffee kiosks that come with a free mobile app that tracks where you are via GPS. You tell them what drink you want, and as you're getting closer to the kiosk, they prepare it so it's ready when you get there. Mm. And it's already paid. You know, it comes right out of your PayPal or however that works. And it's literally like you drive by, stick your arm out the window, and you don't slow down. The window opens, and out comes your drink. And it's like, you know, the baton being passed at the Olympics. Like, bang, you've got the drink and you go. That is my ideal coffee house experience. I want 1 second.
See,
pass,
you know,
me the baton.
But because there's a flaw, though, in your business plan, which is the coffee will get cold, right? It really has to be timed.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The GPS tells them how close you're getting.
Yeah,
so,
but that's
so
tricky,
they see,
right?
They see how, okay, this, you know.
I mean, I do that with Chipotle.
A sophisticated algorithm has to take place. That's why I'm saying I think we're going to need some venture capital here, eggheads, to get this one off the ground. Okay? This isn't Clarissa's water ice or whatever that one was. this one's got
Claritas.
Claritas, thank you. This one has sophisticated algorithms behind it, right? Because it's got to figure out, you know, with the number of traffic lights and how far away they are, we got to start making the drink right now, and it puts it in a queue so that the baristas are ready. And you're going to need somebody with a sturdy arm, right? Because they're going to take a lot of abuse having those coffee cups
grabbed
out of their arm.
But does it take that long to get you? I mean, I know you order very complicated drinks, right? That there's a lot of ingredients.
Now, it's very,
there's
very simple.
There's a lot
simple,
of
right?
syrups.
You go right in there, and you shouldn't have to tell them because, as it says on Starbucks.com, this is part of the drink, but a lot of the places they make it wrong. Listen, I need a cinnamon dolce latte with whip at 115 degrees Fahrenheit, and that takes 5 seconds to come out of my mouth.
Well, I understand that, but how much of a lead time do you need it to be, right? You hit the button, you hit go, hit pay. Mm-hmm. This is my order. It's mm-hmm. got, it's saved in your favorites, right? Mm-hmm. So it just orders it like, you know, the Chipotle app. I think they were one of the first businesses to do this with a mobile app for the iPhone. So I would be over in my office at Fox, and there's a Chipotle down like right around the corner. And I'd go in. I have my favorite saved, wanted a chicken burrito, hit pay. It's tied right to my credit card. Boom. It's tied. Just go to the pickup window. There's a huge line when I walk in of all these other suckers who.
Well, that's very interesting. I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah. So I love, you know, the Chipotle. You get the free app for your iOS device. I'm sure it's for Android as well. Just tie it right to your credit card. Works great. And has you have your, like, your saved items or you're like your recently. So you, all you do is hit, you want the same thing again? Yep, pay. And it finds it by GPS location, what Chipotle is near you, you know, mm-hmm. like which one you want to pay for. So like the other day, my wife and I were going to go grab some lunch and we're like, you know what, let's try it. So on the drive over there, she was driving and I jumped onto the app and found the location, paid for it, ordered our lunch. And by the time we got there, it was lunchtime. There's a huge line out the door. Mm-hmm. We went right past everyone. Right up to the counter.
And these were, I'm sorry, you called them the suckers, was that right?
Suckers, exactly.
Okay, go ahead.
You know, these are the people that don't think ahead.
The ne'er-do-wells.
Exactly. And so I went right past them, right up to the pickup window, grabbed my lunch, paid, and I had already paid. So they just got it all ready for me, handed it to me, and I walked right. I mean, it literally took 30 seconds. Brilliant. Now,
well, you're living the life, Mr. Morris.
I mean, that's brilliant.
The counterpoint,
I mean, that's an affectation of mine.
The counterpoint to Clayton's pretentious, luxurious lifestyle, by the way, is the homeless guy that's waiting for you in the Starbucks bathroom in every New York City Starbucks.
Well, tell him to get a smartphone.
That's right. Like, look, look how luxurious I am. I'm here, you know, here reading this new book about the assassination of President Garfield out here all day, working on my tan on my ninth cup of coffee. But I got to tip you a quarter for giving me the paper towel, homeless Joe. Ah, the underpinnings.
By the way, did you hear about the guy in the bathroom at Starbucks?
I did. I don't know that I want to talk about that while I'm drinking coffee. So we're going to take a moment here to thank one of our show sponsors. Don't you think that'd be appropriate, Mr. Morris?
Sure, go ahead. You do that.
I think we should talk about our friends over at Gazelle.com. I'm going to tell you about an experience that I recently had with Gazelle where I had a gadget that was not among the 250,000 plus gadgets that our friends Gazelle have in a giant directory on their website. And of course, if you're going in, you've got phone, MP3 player, any kind of electronic good you can think of that you want to unload. You tell them the make, the model, the blah, 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 what kind of condition is it in. They'll make you an offer and you say, you know what, for $80, I'll get rid of it. You accept the offer, you print out that prepaid shipping label right there on your printer and off it goes. And it couldn't be simpler. But every once and again, perhaps like me, you come across some weird doodad, and you're like, you know, I'm not even really sure what I'm supposed to be doing with this thing. And, you know, if I could maybe get $10 for it, that'd be a lot better than it sitting here collecting dust. Well, I happen to have one of these wacky things, but our friends over at Gazelle didn't have it listed. So their team did some research, found out what it was, what they thought it was worth, and they came back to me in 3 business days, made me an offer, despite the fact that, you know, it wasn't one of the things that they typically take, just to get this thing off of my hands. And that is the kind of thing I really appreciate. I'll tell you another thing that I appreciate about these guys. The last time I emptied my Gazelle pile, previous to this most recent anecdote of mine, I ended up getting a couple extra bucks because I'd underestimated the condition of some of the goods that I was shipping off. And they got right back to me and said, hey, guess what? These things are in better shape than we had thought. And here's a couple extra bucks for you.
Yeah.
Which is great, because if they hadn't given me those couple extra bucks, hey, I'd never know. They could be off, laughing on top of a giant mountain of those $6, and I would never know.
Exactly. We thank them so much for their support of the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. If you've got used electronics sitting about your house and you want to get cash, and hey, most of your purchases right now are probably going to be on Amazon, right? You're going to do a lot of your Christmas shopping on Amazon. You get an additional 5% if you choose the payment option to get an Amazon gift card when you check out, which is great. So an additional 5% back, do some of your Christmas shopping with Amazon, and it'll save you some extra money. You get some extra cash back in your wallet for that purpose. And hey, when you're checking out, there's a little drop-down menu that says, how did you hear about us? Just click on Clayton Morris Podcasts, etc. And that'll just let them know, hey, you heard about them from us here at Grizzly Productions. We thank them for their support of the show.
We do. We couldn't make this show without them. So,
well, without further ado, why don't you be so kind as to introduce our next guests?
Well, loyal eggheads, as you know, in recent episodes of the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe, Clayton has been doing his best to keep up with the new 52 from DC Comics, and I'm even more woefully behind than he is. However, we are lucky enough here within the Grizzly Productions Network to have 2 experts on such things, so we would like to introduce to you, in public for the very first time, the hosts of the Weekly Long Box are with us this week. Todd and Leonard, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us, gentlemen.
Hey, guys.
Thank you.
All right. So, as we were saying, new 52, right? Like crazy stuff. Tell us, what do we need to know about what's going on? What's hot? What's not? What's the lowdown?
Well, what's hot about the new 52 is we're just coming off the end of all the number twos coming out last week. All the new number threes are coming out this week. But don't be scared. Obviously, the numbers scare a lot of people off, whether it was Action Comics at 902, Detective Comics at 800 and something. You may not be able to jump right in, but DC has been doing a great job of getting the reprints out of number ones and number twos. When I went to the store this past week to pick up my number twos, if I missed a number one, the reprint was sitting right there. I know one of the books, OMAC, I was late to the party on, and when I went to go pick it up 2 weeks ago, number one was right there. So even if I missed it, it's waiting there for me, and even digitally, as Clayton has mentioned before on the show, he's trying to keep up with a few things digitally, and yeah. I think it's even available digitally before it's available at the store. I think,
really?
Yes, I think sometimes you can go online at 8 o'clock in the morning, and the books are ready to go, and I know most stores don't open till about 10 or 11.
Yeah, I've set up, like, you can set up notifications on the, I use the Comixology app, because I think that's sort of an aggregate of all of them, DC and Marvel, and so you can set up notifications, so hey, if you subscribe to the new Justice League, which I've been doing, Batman, Detective Comics, or Batgirl, or whatever, it'll let you know when the new issue's there. You know, we're leading busy lives. I don't know exactly when these new books are coming out. Heck, I don't know when shows are on television anymore. So when these things show up on my iPad, I'm thrilled about it.
So if we were going to go out, let's say, and like I said, I haven't read any of these new 52. Clayton at least is reading some of them. What are the can't-miss books? What do I need to be reading?
I would say I like Deathstroke. Deathstroke's a great book monthly. My favorite book is All-Star Western. It's nice to have some diversity in what DC's doing, and they have Jonah Hex, an old DC Western character, and he's in Old West Gotham with Dr. Arkham, who created Arkham Asylum, which is where all the insane people of that Batman fights go to, and they're fighting a religion of crime. They worship the crime Bible.
And don't be afraid by that horrible Jonah Hex movie that came out a few years ago. I can attest, I was a little afraid of picking up a Western book with my superhero stuff. Usually, everything I pick up is superhero. But All-Star Western was very good. It was a very pretty-looking book, even though Jonah Hex is an ugly-looking fella. The first two issues of that were really, really good, and they started with a second feature of El Diablo, if you remember that character from your DC lore back in the day, one of the many Western characters they had.
What about some of the characters? I'm curious about this because, you know, you sort of feel like, well, there's you know, 900 issues of this of Superman, right? There's all of this mythology, and do you lose any of that, or does DC try to beat you over the head that you need to know all of this stuff? Well, how are they approaching this?
There's a lot of characters that I don't think they really beat you over the head about, and they don't need to. You know, the lay person pretty much knows the basics of Batman's origin story, even if they don't know, like, his parents' name or the name of the person who shot his parents or, you know, whatever it is. A majority of people know a good base of what Batman is or what Superman is, and they're doing a little few tweaks, but nothing too outrageous with characters like that. A perfect example would be Green Lantern. Now, there was a movie that I'd rather not talk about that came out this past summer, but I've been a Green Lantern fan since Geoff Johns has been on the book. That's going on almost 6 years. And the new number one was, personally, I thought, a good continuation of that story, and I'd actually even given it to my brother, who's never read a Green Lantern book before. He only saw the movie, and he said, just based on what he saw from the movie, he was able to keep up, and they didn't beat you over the head with it. They're just like, here's these three characters. One wants the ring, one doesn't want the ring, one's kind of in between being Carol Ferris, and that's really all you need to know. A lot of those big superhero books like that, they're not really beating you over the head with all these facts and everything of all this stuff that you have to know. They're leading you through a nice, easy pace with a lot of these characters, like especially people like Animal Man or Swamp Thing, who haven't been in the DC universe in years. They're really easing you into these books, and that's what they have to do to get people to stay with these books.
Does it seem like, I mean, what's the talk at the shops? Is there one that's clearly a dud? Is there one to avoid?
Todd?
I would have to say Static Shock was one of them. Mr. Terrific was another one that I read that I didn't care for. A lot of them, as number ones, I think a lot of the writers, and I've tried a lot of the books. I tried almost all of the New 52. It's certain writers just pack too much into the first issue, and they don't let things flow naturally. They have to explain every little thing, and that's sometimes what the big problem is with these books.
Well, it's a lot of the characters, like you had mentioned with the Mr. Terrific, I think, but you know, me personally, Todd mentioned he's read pretty much all the books, and out of 52 books, I think I maybe read about 23 of them, so I don't have as much experience as reading all of them. But me personally, there's certain characters that I just really don't care about. Like, you couldn't get me to read a Catwoman book, you know, under threat of, you know, torture. But there is a really good Catwoman run by Ed Brubaker that I want to get my hands on. And then the new Teen Titans, when you look at who the artist is, you look who the writer is, you know, sometimes I don't need to stick my hand in a fire to know it's hot, to avoid it. And I'm just like,
fair enough.
Yeah, if I read that book, I'm going to be very upset. So I just avoid it. I just keep things that would make me upset away from me, and that's why I pick up a Batman book or a Superman book or a Green Lantern book. I try some new things every now and then.
Let's talk
it's going to scare me too much.
Let's talk a little Batman, because I think there are three new titles, right? Well, there's Batman, there's Detective, and then there's The Dark Knight.
And Batman and Robin.
Oh, and Batman and Robin. Jeez. So, I mean, I've been buying Detective, and I've really loved that. And I also picked up Batman. I'm enjoying that as well. I mean, are all four of them good, or what would you guys say?
I think they're all really good, but I had to whittle down. I can't get four Batman books a month and afford it. I've narrowed it down to Batman and Batman and Robin. Detective almost made the cut. It's really good. It's just a matter of fundage.
Yeah.
And Dark Knight, for me, I looked at it, and they have, like, this weird thing where, like, Two-Face is the Hulk now, and I'm just like, it's a little too silly for me, and, you know, I'll take a silly Batman story every now and then. But the Batman and Robin book is essentially, you know, Batman, Bruce Wayne, sorry to pull the cowl off, but his son Damian now is Robin, and his son Damian was trained by the League of Assassins, Ra's al Ghul, Talia, and all that sort of thing. So he's just a horrible, miserable little person, and Bruce is trying so hard to not make him a horrible person. But, you know, Bruce isn't really the most nurturing father in the world, as one would expect. And then just the plain Batman title is written by Scott Snyder, who's one of my favorite writers, American Vampire. He's also doing Swamp Thing. But that book is really good. It's building off what we've seen before in the Batman books, before the relaunch. Batman and Green Lantern were the two characters that really didn't see too much shuffle. Like, their books were almost continuations of what we saw before. You know, it's a new number on the cover, whether it be one or two, but it's essentially just a continuation of what those writers were telling before the big relaunch.
And I heard a lot of people ask, like, how do you get, because they discussed that the superheroes have only been around for 5 years in this new universe. And they're like, well, how do you get four Robins in 5 years? I kind of find it interesting that they've said that Batman's been around for 10, but for the first five, he's been in secret. Nobody knew about him. And he was outed in Justice League One for the first time. So you can have all the, you know, multiple Robins over the years.
I don't know. My gut tells me this is Heroes Reborn for DC, but I guess we'll have to give him more of a chance. And along those lines, you know, we over here at the Grizz anyway, it seems like whenever we're talking Marvel, we're talking about what they're doing in the entertainment world. We don't talk much about their print books. What's going on over at Marvel? What's hot right now?
Well, Fear itself just wrapped up, and that was their big summer crossover, and they're already leading that into several new books. But they just did new number ones for a ton of titles. They did a new relaunch with all the X-Men books. They've kind of split those off into two groups, with Cyclops on the West Coast leading one group and Wolverine on the other side of the continent leading another group of them. They just did a whole big push of saying, like, it's the last issue of Uncanny X-Men. It's the one book that's never been canceled or renumbered or anything like that. And then they're just relaunching it next month with the new number one. They did a new Hulk number one. They just did a Punisher number one again a couple years ago. And I think Punisher's on his ninth number one over the course of the history of that character. And that's a really good book, though. Greg Rucka, who's a great crime writer, is writing that. And what else have they recently relaunched that's good? Oh, Spider-Man's really good. They just wrapped up Spider-Island, and I know Mike and Clayton, you guys have read stuff from back in the past, and I'm not sure how much the Clone Saga from the 90s pains you inside, but
Yeah.
Allow me to pitch to you that Spider Island not only was a villain of the it was headed up by the Jackal who put a virus in bed bugs and infected the entire island of New York, so everyone had spider powers.
Now I heard about this and I sort of avoided it, but then here's what I'm hearing, right, which is that post Spider Island, it's as if no one's remembered. Mike and I were just talking about this. No one's remembered that the entire island was infected with spiders, and it's like we're past that now. Like, never mind that. Like, hey, your grandmother just died because she was infected with a spider. We're past that. Manhattan's back to normal. Like, people are still reeling from 9/11 10 years later, right? I mean, a whole island is infected with a spider. Are they able to get past that quickly?
Well, it was about 3 years ago in the Avengers book where an entire army of Ultrons came and ransacked it, which was then followed up by an entire army of Carnages that came and ransacked things. And then I think they had about 2 weeks in the Marvel Universe New York City where everything was okay. So I think to the New York City Marvel Universe, it's just like another day to them. It's just like, I got bit by a bed bug. I have spider powers. It must be Tuesday.
Exactly. It's like the Kree are invading this week. It was the Skrulls last week. The week before that, it was the Shi'ar. The Toadmen the month before that. It's just, if you ever like really thought about how soap opera these are, your head would explode.
I personally am waiting for the invasion of Batroc the Leapers. I don't know how soon they can get that done, but that's the summer crossover I'm waiting for.
I want the big wheel to come back from Amazing Spider-Man.
Spider-Man did have this spider buggy. They did update it recently just to transport around.
Why does
around.
He need a buggy? What world does Spider-Man, who can zip around quicker than anything, need a car to get stuck in New York City traffic? I live in New York.
It's the same reason that Iron Man needs 15 different armors that all do slightly different things. Merchandising. You know it as well as I do.
That's true. Like, I was at Target looking for something for my son, and I saw Spider-Man Arctic wear or Spider-Man Arctic costume. Like, why does Spider-Man? First of all, when is he going to be in the Arctic Circle? And why would he need a bluish costume to blend in there?
Trying to get out of the Savage Land? Maybe, I don't know.
the new Young Justice cartoon does it really well, where all the characters on Young Justice all have stealth versions of their costumes. So that's just to put the extra action figure out there. But even on Batman Brave and the Bold, they did like a meta joke recently in regards to that, where Batmite was trying to get the show canceled. So in the course of the show, he was making Batman use all, as he put it, terrible accessories that the action figures have, so people will hate the TV show. And he also changed Aquaman's voice from John DiMaggio to that of Ted McGinley in the show. So trying to get people to hate the Batman Brave and the Bold show.
And that actually ended up being the last episode.
Yes.
That one with Batmite, sadly. As Clayton and I often sing the praises of Batman, the Brave and the Bold, I just saw the one where Space Ghost showed up.
Yes, in that little...
It was amazing.
Yes, it was awesome. It was those opening segments before the actual episode begins are so awesome. They just throw the most random people in there. Like, what little kid is going to be like, hey, now I know who Commandy is. This is great. My life is perfect now.
Commandy.
So from the world of indie books, tell us a little something what's going on. We're so detached right now. Like, what's a good indie book if I want to pick one up this week?
Well, this week, you could probably still get Walking Dead, but I wouldn't pick up Walking Dead right where it is right now at issue 90, but you can always get Walking Dead trades. I think that first trade of the first 6 issues, and I always say trade, I'm not hip to the graphic novel term, it's just I'm set in my ways. I think it's like $9. You can get those first 6 issues, and that's a great way. And Walking Dead is even doing a thing where they're doing Walking Dead Weekly, where they've been reprinting the entire series from number 1 every week a new issue is coming out. So even if you wanted the single issues of Walking Dead, you could pick those up. Or the trades of Walking Dead, every store in the world keeps those in print because they're Image Comics like bestseller every month. When that book comes out, bestseller. When that trade comes out, bestseller. Hardcover comes out, bestseller. There's so many different versions of The Walking Dead, and Walking Dead is probably my favorite indie book right now, but you know, I guess there's much more indie stuff out there, but that's about as indie as I get when it gets to comic books.
Walking Dead is one of my favorite too, but another book that I like that just started coming out, and it's only on issue 3 if you wanted to get it, is they revamped Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, written again by Kevin Eastman, one of the creators from the original Mirage run back in the 80s. And the nice thing about it is it's nice enough for kids that it's not too gory, but it also has a little bit of the more adult edge that the original Mirage run had, not the cartoon where they just sat around eating pizza and joke. Not one of my favorite times in, you know, adaptations of comics, but, you know, it's not too far into the run, so it'd be real easy to jump on.
Nice. Well, good stuff, guys. Well, we don't have to have you guys back on real soon. And, of course, we should mention that in your own incarnation of the Weekly Long Box, the new show that we are launching here on Grizzly Productions, we're going to hear you guys chatting about what's going on at the comic shop every week and keeping us abreast of all of the books. I'll be definitely listening every week in my attempt to keep up with all the books. So real treat having you guys on. Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks for having us again, Mike. Clayton, thanks again.
All right, so our thanks to those guys. Looking forward to that. So when do you think that show is going to kick off, the Weekly Long Box? Do we know
yet? Probably another week or two, I would say. It won't be long now. I would guess before Thanksgiving arrives, but about a month after the Christmas drinks at McDonald's, you can expect the Weekly Long Box to roll out. Hey, we've asked you to send in some guilty pleasure song selections. A very timely one has come in, The Monster Mash. By Bobby Pickett and the Crypt Kickers. I don't know that will end up being played today, but thank you for sending that in. Also, the Desert Pope writes in Vision of Love by Mariah Carey. Ooh. And I would agree that that is a guilty pleasure because I would put the windows up.
Absolutely. My wife disagreed with Raspberry Beret being a guilty pleasure song last week.
Really? I think you put the windows up for that.
Yeah, I'm on the fence on it, you know? I mean,
if you're going to sing along with that, because, you know, you got to get up there.
Right, you really do.
You got to put the windows up.
Yeah, that's true. I think if you're just going to listen to it, you can be a windows down. But if you're going to be singing along to it like you inevitably will with Prince, windows up. Hey, we watched, so how far along are you in Breaking Bad, by the way?
No further than the last time we discussed it.
Episode 3, 4?
That's right, yep, yeah. I'm on 3 of 7.
We just finished 4 of 7 last night. So the reason we're talking about this is because next week here on the show, we're going to do our season 1 Breaking Bad wrap-up, where we'll talk about it for quite a bit. So you can send in your thoughts on the show. If you're following along with us, we're going to do all the seasons over the course of a few months here on the show. So if you haven't watched it, it's free on Netflix streaming. If you, of course, pay for Netflix streaming, you can catch it there.
Right. It is free if you've paid for it.
Right. But you don't have to wait for the discs to come in the mail. So you can watch the season 1 of Breaking Bad. Right. So what are your thoughts so far?
But you can do that as well, because if, like me, your Netflix streaming service is more miss than hit, you might want to just give up and go to the discs.
Oh, is that what you did? You went to the discs?
So I've given it some serious thought. I had a bunch of movies in my Netflix disc queue that, like, I always push them off, like, behind the TV series.
Right.
And then not realizing, as I've just finished the most recent season of Dexter that's available, one of these must have popped up in the queue. And I had never seen The Usual Suspects.
Really?
With Gabriel Byrne and Kevin Spacey, et cetera, et cetera. Benicio del Toro, directed by Bryan Singer. I had never previously seen that. So, yeah, I didn't know. It really was a pleasant surprise, because the Netflix thing came and I thought, oh, God, like, what's next in the queue? I don't even know. So I checked that out, because as I said, like, the streaming here is more miss than hit. I think I tried to start episode 4 of Breaking Bad, and I spent maybe, of the 10 minutes that were spent trying to view it, 8 of them were spent loading.
Yeah, well, the problem is, because I think you have, your Roku box all the way up in the top level of the house.
Right.
And then you have the modem. Do you have it in the basement?
Correct.
Yeah, so that's what I was experiencing in my house, which was the opposite. I had the modem coming in the house from Fios in the top floor of our house. And regardless of the speed of Fios, which is great, doesn't matter. If you're 5 floors away trying to pick up Wi-Fi, it's going to be a bad experience. So, yeah, I've tried those. And I know you had texted me about those repeaters, getting a repeater up and running. And I tried a slew of them. The best one that I tried was that Netgear repeater. But then that was sort of hit and miss as well. So finally, the solution was to have Verizon come back out to the house for Fios, and they installed a separate data entry point into the house for free. So the modem then moved to our TV room. Now we have the TV connected, Apple TV right there, so there's no waiting at all for Netflix. Just pops up instantly. and it's plugged in via Ethernet now. It's hardwired. I had a friend out in California tell me who works at Apple. He said, I never use Wi-Fi for any of those things. I always rely on hardwire. So that may be a solution to you're with Comcast.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Just ask, and I know a lot of people suffer through this because at nighttime, right around the 8 o'clock prime time, you know, they say that what 32% of all internet traffic is now because of Netflix. 32% of all broadband usage in America is because of Netflix. So, and a lot of that's occurring during prime time.
It sounds like a lot.
It is. So now, you know, down right around that time of night, of course, that's when the big problem is. So if you can hardwire your device or get a separate data point, you may call Comcast and say, hey, you know, I've got the modem in the basement. And what they'll do is they'll remove it from your basement, but they'll just put like a little converter so that your computer is still hardwired in the basement. And they'll move the modem up to a higher floor so that it's – and the router. You can move the router up there. And then everyone will benefit from that upstairs. So
Everyone.
That's the way I roll. Everyone. So what did you think of Usual Suspects?
It was all right. Are you a big fan of that?
I'm not a huge fan. I know they're those sort of, it's like the Reservoir Dogs folks. Do you know what I mean?
I don't like Reservoir Dogs. I don't like most of the stuff by Tarantino.
But it's I think it's in that same camp. You have those folks who are just diehard sort of Tarantino fans who love like the, you know, love Usual Suspects and that sort of thing. And they, and they get obsessed with that sort of stuff. I don't know. I think it's a great movie, but I'm not, you know, I've seen it like twice and that's about it.
Yeah, it's not the end of the world. For me, and I'm not a massive Kevin Spacey fan by any stretch of the imagination, but if I was going to go out of my way to watch something with him, I could not more wholeheartedly endorse anything as I would Glengarry Glen Ross, which is a spectacular drama made from the David Mamet play of the same name. That the movie was made, what, Clayton, 1992? Does that seem right?
That seems right, yeah.
And this, as a matter of fact, this film was introduced to me by my co-host here on the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe, Clayton Morris, who had it on a laser disc.
Yeah.
Clayton was the only person I've ever known who had a laser disc player. One day he sat me down in his basement, as he was wont to do, and he put on two white fabric gloves and began to remove from its record album case the copy of Glengarry Glen Ross, which was six discs, and he began to load them. It took about an hour. He began to load them into the Laserdisc player, and he said, I really want you to sit and watch this. And Glengarry Glen Ross has become my very favorite drama in film, and it was definitely one of those that I did not appreciate it entirely as it was happening, because you really don't fully understand everything, I think, in one pass.
Right,
with Glengarry Glen Ross. It is one of the moodiest films, and I realize people don't generally seek movies out based on that quality, right? Like, I really want to watch something tonight that's moody.
Right.
Nobody really says that.
I want something depressive and moody. You got anything like that? And that's rainy and moody?
Yeah. Nobody ever says, I'd really like to watch something that is brilliantly lit.
Right.
You don't get a lot of that, or I could just watch a movie. It doesn't matter if there's no action or anything like that, but you know, if the dialogue is razor sharp, I'll watch it. People generally don't seek that out, and I think Glengarry Glen Ross is really unique. One, because its cast is unbelievable,
right?
It's just, and everyone that's in it is perfect. They're absolutely perfect. I'm not an Al Pacino fan. I think he and De Niro are two of the most overrated actors of the last million years. He's absolutely perfect in Glengarry Glen Ross. I like Jack Lemmon, and he's fascinating in this. I learned to love Kevin Spacey because of Glengarry Glen Ross. And there's tons of other Ed O'Neill, you know, who's a fantastic actor. Alan Arkin is in it. There is hands down, beyond dispute, the single greatest cinematic monologue ever delivered by Alec Baldwin in the first act of Glengarry Glen Ross.
Absolutely. And you know, that, of course, this is a little trivia. The David Mamet play on which Glengarry is based, and the movie looks like a play, doesn't it?
Sure.
It takes place in like three rooms, maybe two rooms. That's about it. Just like a play. That scene with Alec Baldwin is not in the play. was written for the film.
Right. It was written, Baldwin had tried out for the part that ultimately Pacino got, but they liked Baldwin's audition so much that they wrote a part just for him in the film. And you'll see why. You will see why. You cannot help but quote that monologue for weeks to come thereafter, politically incorrect though that monologue is. And it also has one of my very favorite, like, maybe non-Batman film scores ever. I'm a really big fan of Hans Zimmer's work on The Dark Knight and a very big fan of Danny Elfman's 1989 Batman score and the John Williams Superman score too, of course. But I spent a long time hunting down the out-of-print Glengarry, Glenn Ross soundtrack to the point that at one point I think I had two of them. Didn't I give one to you?
I don't think so.
Maybe I have two copies upstairs. But at one point I did. It took me so long to track them down. Like, I had different sources working on it for me, and then because I had so many people trying to hunt this thing down for me, I ended up with two copies.
It is a great jazz score. And it, I was thinking about this because it's sort of that era, the movie Falling Down, which you and I've talked about here on the show before.
Right.
It strikes me as I'm watching Breaking Bad, and episode 4 is, you know, great. I mean, the whole series is great at this point, and only 7 episodes in the first season. It reminds me of he reminds me of Michael Douglas's character from Falling Down in a way. No? Do you not see that?
Sure. Yeah. I'm not disagreeing with you.
You know, he's the guy going through this through midlife crisis, dealing with, you know, looking at the world through a different lens, you know, and it has that feeling to it. It's sort of what struck me about it last night. But jump on board that. I saw Unknown, by the way.
You saw Unknown with Liam Neeson?
Yeah, upon your suggestion. And it was okay. It was okay.
Right, it's like standard Liam Neeson fare now, right? Like, all those movies, like, you know, when they take that to whatever, like a casting director, they're like, well, you know, we got to get Liam Neeson for this, right?
Right.
Like, nobody else gets... It's not like they're like, you know, we need Steve Guttenberg for this.
Right. Yeah, where's like, Guttenberg? Where's Guttenberg? Is he working? Let's get him on this.
Nobody's saying that. Like, these are Liam Neeson movies.
I mean, what struck me about it is, well, a couple of things. Number one, it was hard for me to buy that he was this assassin, and that he wouldn't remember. And it seemed like to be an attempt at a ripoff of the Bourne films.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
same sort of plot devices.
It definitely had a little bit of that. The thing I didn't like about it is it was one of those movies where I'm trying so hard to figure it out that I'm not really paying attention to the movie anymore.
Right.
You know? It's also interesting. Another fault, I think I may have mentioned this when I first watched it, is this movie relies heavily on whether or not you think January Jones is drop-dead gorgeous. And if you're in the camp that does not, this movie somehow doesn't have the traction it should.
Well, it also makes you rely on the idea that they are married. Mm-hmm. And I didn't buy that, right?
Right. She's 24.
Right.
He's 60.
Right. What, is she wooed by his knowledge of bioengineering?
Right.
I mean, that's what he claims to be.
Powerful aphrodisiac, I think.
Right. I mean, he's not like some sort of, you know, musician. It's not like he's Mick Jagger or something.
I wonder if one day she was, you know, walking down like a crowded metropolitan street and she saw this lovable, in the autumn of his years, you know, scientific scamp in the window of a Starbucks.
Right.
Who had nothing to do with his day.
But read a Steve Jobs biography.
He was reading a textbook and enjoying his 9th cup of coffee.
And she says, I want to get in on this. He's got something going for him. He just can while his days away.
It's either the luxury, the status symbol of or the sexiness of his Diet Pepsi.
Oh, look, he's got a plate of cookies. Look at that. I got to get in on that. Oh, yeah, I don't know. And then just this, it seemed completely contrived to me. It was enjoyable. There were just seemed like some plot devices that were swiped right from the Bourne films. He has amnesia, but he can't remember that he's a good fighter. Like, he has, you know, he can't remember that he's a black belt, right? He can break some guy's neck. They do it very well in the first Bourne film, if you recall, which that trilogy, to me, stands alone. I think that trilogy is one of the finest action thriller trilogies in movie history. The fact that the three of them are excellent is pretty remarkable. He, in that first film, though, after he's rescued from that ship, right, he's floating in the water, he's rescued, they remove the bullet from his back, he has no recollection of who he is, how he got there, he's sort of nursed back to health on that fishing vessel, then he's released to the world, he goes into, I don't know, is it Poland somewhere? I'm not sure what city he, oh, Prague, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you'll find Poland's a whole country.
Right, but I mean, I don't know if it was a port town or something that he came into Poland. I don't know. But anyway, he's in, I guess he rolls into Prague, and he's sitting there on that park bench, freezing in that coat that night, and those two guards come up to him and ask him what he's doing there and for his papers, and suddenly he recalls that he can speak in their language, and the guy puts, like, the nightstick out, and he, like, has this flash where he realizes he knows what to do next. You know, where it zooms into his eyes and he realizes, like, he's able to just, like, quickly maneuver his arms to grab the nightstick and bash the guy in the knee and above the, about the head. And then he takes off. Mm-hmm. Well done, you know. Liam Neeson, though, suddenly, until, like, the final fight scene, doesn't realize he can kick some butt, you know. Mm-hmm. He's like, why am I in such good shape? I'm 65. Shouldn't I be slouched over with a beer? Watching a football game.
I wonder, too, like, this is not the first Liam Neeson movie I've seen like this, where I kind of wonder if, like, upon him being cast in his contract, he's like, I want everything to be shot with, like, a light blue filter over the film. That's how I think I look best. So if we could just, I think my massive schnoz is best concealed by a light blue filter.
Right.
Just have that laid over top of the whole two-hour movie.
Now, I will say Rob Roy. Have you ever seen the film Rob Roy starring him?
No, I have not. But I know you had that on Laserdisc.
I did, because there's that beautiful, I think Tim Robbins is in there as well.
Yes,
he and Tim
yes.
Robbins. And one of the most fantastic sword fighting scenes in movie history is in that film. Mm-hmm. And it's beautifully shot. That film is really, really well done. And, you know, it came out of that era. It's funny how those movies sort of pop up, right? That movie came out at a time when suddenly there's all these, like, Scottish kilt movies. It wasn't like Braveheart came out at that same time. Rob Roy. There might have been another one that came out. They all came out at that same time.
That I don't know with any real certainty. I can tell you, though, that after we watched Disc 6 of the Glengarry Glen Ross Laserdisc Special Edition that Clayton had, he was really weary. Clayton's eyes, they were drowsy. And I snuck out of his house and went back to my place, which was Catacorner, and sticking out of my back jean pocket, Clayton saw the laser disc of Rob Roy, and he thought something was amiss. Then he phoned my house and said, hey, did you steal my Rob Roy laser disc? How did you see that sticking out of my back pocket?
The giant disc in your back right? pocket.
And you were like, you don't even have a laser disc player.
He just wanted it for a coaster. You know, my parents keep trying to get those out of their house.
Because
I don't really use it anymore. I have the Laserdisc player in the basement.
What? You don't really use the Laserdisc player anymore?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, the other day I saw Sting in concert, right? And there are some. I got to do some digging for this. And I was gonna jump on Amazon after the show. I thought maybe I'd do it during the Grizz, during a lull. But right. I figured I'd do it after the show. I've been meaning to find some of those great old concert discs that were never released anywhere else. I mean, they were not released on DVD, and I certainly have not been able to find them streaming anywhere. Where are these things?
Right, like that 10 Sumner's Tale one where they filmed it overnight in his house.
I love that one. I mean,
that one was really, really good. And you used to force feed me a lot of Sting, and I got to tell you, man, a lot of it was crap.
Right.
But that one was excellent, and it's not in any other form. It's
no,
only on Laserdisc, because I've tried to hunt it down, and I couldn't find it.
It was on VHS, and I used to, and here's what I did. When I worked at Saturday Matinee, I ordered that VHS for the store, so it would play on a loop in the store, and it was always on the TV above, at that store, but it was on VHS, but that was it. It was never, and it was on that Laserdisc, and I loved that disc, and it's really, really well done, really beautifully done.
And you got to watch the whole thing, not just the musical bits, but like the in-between bits really make it.
Right, like him walking the grounds of the house and having conversations and you know, different things around the house. Really, really well done. They basically re-recorded the entire album with a camera crew there. Mm-hmm. But they did it all in one night, so that when you get to the sort of very quiet nocturnal songs, it's nighttime when they're playing them with the fire mm-hmm. in the fireplace. It's really, really well done. But yeah, mm-hmm. I can't find them anywhere. And like there's that Soul Cages concert disc that I had on Laserdisc. Right. I don't know. You can't find that anywhere. There's a whole slew of them that I think
the Laserdisc that you had of the Bring On the Night concert even had extra stuff that wasn't on some of the other releases, right? I'm not misremembering that, am I?
No, you're right about that.
Like, so, it even had rehearsals that they did.
Right, full rehearsals. And, you know, it's interesting, I think with the new DVD that they released for Bring On the Night, which came out just a few years ago, that had a lot of good stuff on it. But, yeah, there's a lot of that stuff you can't find anywhere. So I part of me wants, you know, I don't want to get rid of any of that stuff because there's some good things in there. There's a police Laserdisc that I have as well.
Isn't there a device that you could like attach to the Laserdisc player that would stream it to your house in the Poconos?
God, that's a good question.
I'm kind of surprised. You know, I think if you go down into your basement right now, there's probably one of those devices down there. You just don't realize it.
I don't know. You know who would have the answer, though? Your wife.
Liam Neeson. Liam Neeson, but you'll have to look through a light blue filter at him to get the answer.
At a Starbucks.
Snap your neck.
Well, I'm going to the coffee shop later, so
I knew you would be.
Maybe I'll run into a salt of the earth older man.
Hey, a couple weeks ago we talked here on The Grizz about the alleged worst songs of the 80s. And after that concluded, I, to myself, was thinking, like, what in my opinion was the worst song of the 80s? And of course, let's be fair here. Like, what we're really talking about is, what is our least favorite of the songs that made it to radio of the 80s, right? Because there's probably a whole lot of horrible music that never made it to radio. But in the 80s, that was my main method, you know, what was played on top 40 FM radio was what I was hearing. So, you know, we're not really talking about an entire decade's worth of music, are we? We're talking about a decade's worth of music that made it to top 40 radio is really what we're talking about here. And I think my least favorite, like, this is, like, if it's on an 80s compilation, like, I probably won't even listen to the compilation. Anytime it comes on ever, I just immediately turn to another. I can't stand it. Is The Stroke by Billy Squier.
That's hilarious you mentioned that. This morning, Billy Squier was on, they were doing a retrospective on MSNBC this morning because...
Of Billy Squier?
Well, he was a part of the discussion because there's a new book out about the history of MTV or the music video as it relates to MTV. And it just came out and the two authors were on talking about it. Hmm. And they were breaking down like how, you know, early 1980s when the first one, you know, big ones really came out. And you talked to individuals about it. No one had any idea what a music video was. Mm-hmm. I mean, no one knew the term music video. So if you said that to someone, no one would have any idea what you're talking about. Although in the industry, it was certainly becoming in vogue to have discussions about it. But the main street USA had no idea what you were talking about. MTV was only on like one or two channels or one or two markets in the country, one of which was Tulsa, Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And they talked about how, interestingly, the record executives went to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and they found that... because the music videos were playing on television, the local record stores were selling out of certain albums as a result of them seeing the music videos. And folks were going into haircut places asking to get their hair like the flock of seagulls. Mm. And so they were like, we're on to something here. You know, if we can do this around the rest of the United States, we're on to something here.
Right on.
But Billy Squier... had a, it was interesting for him because he was sort of like a one-man rock and roll machine, Billy Squier mm-hmm. was. You know, he wasn't like Led Zeppelin. He was Led Zeppelin it just as a one-man sort of wrecking crew. His videos, though, were kind of ridiculous and mocked and everything. So they were just talking about Billy Squier this morning. That's the second time today I've heard Billy Squier talked about.
And he doesn't come up all that much.
No.
He really doesn't. There are a lot of really kind of, to me, very irritating 80s songs, but I just kind of thought of that. Like, that one, I just instantly, like, the second I hear that, stroke, like, no, done.
I have to say, yeah, that's pretty bad. But some of the ones that stick out to me are, like 99 Luftballons.
See, I'll listen to the German version of that. Every once and again, I'm all right with that. I don't have a hard aversion to 99 Luftballons.
Whip It. Mm-hmm. Devo drives me nuts. But I don't have, there's not one that really, maybe sticks out to me as a, just a, one you'd have to switch off immediately. Right. I'd have to give that some thought.
Mickey by Tony Basil's tough to get through.
Absolutely. That always is, that's always the top of my list.
Right. It's tough to get through that one.
I have to think about that.
Well, before we get to a guilty pleasure song sent in by a loyal egghead, it might be your lucky day, Aaron_Rob, we should pause for a moment to thank one of our loyal True Blue Show sponsors, don't you think?
I think we should. We should thank our good friends over at Cobra Electronics. They make two great devices, and as you head into the holidays, I mean, tell you what, pick one or two of these up for the loved one in your life. I think these would, one of which would make a great stocking stuffer, the Cobra Tag. And the Cobra Tag is simple. It slides right on your keychain. And it's a connected device, so it works over Bluetooth. So you'll never lose your keys again. Download the free app for your smartphone, and basically, if you can't find your keys, you log into the app and it starts beeping. Lets you know exactly where your keys are using GPS technology. Of course, it's all over Bluetooth, so it lets you know if you've gone too far away from your keys. And it works in reverse. If you lose your smartphone, you tap the little Cobra Tag system on your keychain, and it beeps and lets you know where your smartphone is. So, if you're giving one of those away for Christmas, smart move. Plus, the Cobra iRadar, which is fantastic. You plug that into your car, you get to download the free Cobra app from the iTunes store or from the Android marketplace, and you're driving along, and it's paired with your smartphone. The radar is paired with your smartphone. It gives you all kinds of laser detection alerts as you're traveling. It'll give you, depending on what state you're in, they're all in the database, so it doesn't matter. I think Virginia is the only state that outlaws it. Outlaws radar detectors, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, it's the only state. And so you're driving along, you're getting the beeps, you're getting the K alert, you're getting a pop alert. The other day we were driving back and forth, and boy, there was a cop hidden right off the side of the road, and he shined his laser right on us, and it went right off. Pop alert, and it was beeping and letting us know. He was watching us. It was like a 25-mile-an-hour zone. We were smart. We were doing 25, so we're good. But it works so well. It's really fantastic. They update their database twice daily. So in case there's any new speed traps or red light cameras that pop up around the cities that you're near and dear to, they'll let you know. They're not out of date. Check them out at CobraElectronics.com, makers of both the incredible iRadar system and the Cobra Tag. Great, great gifts for the holiday season, I'm telling you, or any time of the year. Check them out. We thank them so much for their support of the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe.
Everything Clayton Morris has just told you is true. Of course, if you've been over lately to our brand new website, grizzlyproductions.tv, you can see all of our great programs. They get rolled out right there as they publish throughout the week, including the twice weekly Sports Report with Paul Roberts, which has really taken off. If you are a sports fan, you need to check out Paul Roberts, who publishes twice a week over at grizzlyproductions.tv. All our other programs are housed over there as well. We love to hear from you, whether it's on our Facebook fan page or through Twitter. It is from Twitter. Our account is Grizzly Bear Cafe, all as one word. We have plucked for this, and as just last week I was doing a brief radio interview on a country music station, as they kept me on hold waiting for my moment to arrive, I actually was hearing this song thinking, this is a song you put your windows up on. And then Loyal Egghead tweeted it into us. So Aaron, Rob, you hit the nail on the head. This one's surprisingly recent, given our somewhat retro tastes here. Beware, here comes Taylor Swift's Love Story.
See the lights, see the party, the ball games, see you make So alone, I keep waiting for you, but you never come.